You're listening to The Threshing Floor.
Welcome to The Threshing Floor. I'm Randy Moggins. We are doing video for this. This is Threshing Floor TV as well. What if everything we knew about the original text of the Old Testament were challenged? And what if now God the Creator chose to open up understanding about Himself, His promises, our past, and our future at a crucial moment in human history? Would He use the pedigreed professors of linguistics and theology, the same doctors of the church who took over for 1,600 years and rode roughshod over believers? What if the truth about who He is and who we are became a matter of simple language hidden in plain view for thousands of years, waiting for the restoration at the end of the age? What if all the rules no longer apply? My guests for this show are Chris and Michelle from the Chronicle Project. And we are going to delve into the restoration of the original Hebrew language and what it means to you in understanding the scriptures. Chris and Michelle, welcome.
Hi, Randy. Nice to be here again.
Yeah, and a lot of the listeners need to know as well that we did originally shoot a video about a month ago. That video is released on YouTube, part of it anyway. We lost part of it in the process of recording, the process of learning how to do video. So I guess where we'll start with this tonight is give us some background on how the Chronicle Project began and where this adventure started as you were uncovering this mystery.
Wow, backing up again. 4 years. About 4 years ago. Being Jewish, we study ancient Hebrew, and the more you get into it, the more you start to see that the very large rule books, and believe me, they're big ones, for how the language works is unbelievably confusing. And I started one day thinking to myself that we have experts that have been doing this for 20 years, translating. I mean, they breathe the language day in and day out. They still need the books. And if you have three experts in a room, they'll disagree as to exactly how something is supposed to be translated. And the thought coming to my mind is, I'm supposed to believe that after 20 years, you can't have this language down, but a six-year-old shepherd boy can speak this fluently. And you see the problem there. That simple logic told me there was something extremely wrong. So we started looking at the texts that were there and delving in and saying to ourselves, there's no way there can be this many errors on error, on error, on error, and still they're telling us you have to believe it this way, don't question it. So what we came up with was the simple idea. If this really is the language of higher being, then it should display that somehow. So what we did is we started, we took the rule book, we threw it away, and we said we're going to observe what's here, ignore the rule book, and see what comes out of simple observation. Mm-hmm. And so we started looking at the texts and just seeing if there was simple patterns that might show up that would be a little better than the rules that are applying right now. And Kim, who's not here at the moment, was reading through the Strong's and came across the word to tear. And she noticed that the word to tear has two letters. And when a third letter was added, it changed how the word was
the direction
of how the word went. So, for example, you add a letter, it was to tear down. Different letter, tear off. different letter, tear into pieces, different letter, changed it every time. And she said to me, do you think that this pattern might, in any way, show up more than this? And so what we did is we started looking for any other two-letter words and then watched how the word changed when the next letter was added. And sure enough,
a pattern emerged.
Exactly the same direction occurred every time the same letter was added onto the two-letter word. And so what we started to do from there, and at that time we thought, just a simple pattern. We didn't think this was any major breakthrough. So what we started doing is simply assembling all the words we could find, watched how they were affected by the letter, and after a while, after seeing it enough times, you started to realize that there was a specific word that was attached to that direction. And 4 years later now, I guess 4 years, we have the fully assembled work. And boy, do I wish it was that quick. But that was a long 4 years, really, a long 4 years.
Now, back up for a minute, if you will. You have 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet.
Right.
These letters are what you call glyphs. Explain the concept of a glyph and how that plays into what you call the self-defining Hebrew.
Sure. The reason we're calling them glyphs instead of letters is a letter is something that you find in a phonetic language such as English. And it's very simple. If you have a glass, it's spelled g-l-a-s. Okay, very simple, phonetic language. And that's how that works. And the only reason we know that this is a glass is because we memorized that English word. There's nothing in the word glass that would help whatsoever in knowing that from outside. The Hebrew is constructed on a different base, which is quite fascinating. Each letter has a concept, a universal concept, which a person can do that motion with their hand. For example, the shan, which it looks like a W to the average person. This, anybody who sees Star Trek is going to recognize this because Leonard Nimoy actually took this, because when the Kohen are blessing at the temple, or sorry, at the synagogue, you turn your back and then they hold their hands like this. This is also, two shans is the number six. And you can see why. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And that's why. So this, the shan, is to project. And so they hold their hands like this because they're projecting the blessing upon those there. Okay? So what it is once it no longer becomes a phonetic sound, but it's applied a concept, then it's a glyph. It's simply a shape which has the universal concept attached to it. And this idea that a language was constructed like this was theoretical only. And basically now we've found it, and it's our personal belief that it's not just this language that does it. We believe also that Aramaic is the same, and Arabic is the same, and potentially even Coptic Egyptian is exactly the same. And they're all based, but this concept was lost over the last little while, and people believe that a word is a word because that's the memorized sound. Now, how the glyph set works is simple. You take the 22 words, and if you mix two of the concepts, you know, give me an example of mixing two concepts. The word sham is made up of the sheen and the mam. I should point out, by the way, if our pronunciation of the words, or sorry, the glyphs differs as we're talking, it's because we've set up a system to strip away all of the extras, but we still have to communicate in the old system. So sometimes you'll hear us say one sound. They'll say sheen, we'll say shan, because we put a soft A between everything. They have multiple different sounds between each of the letters because they thought that the words could have, like, you know, 20 meanings. And so they would have a sheen, a shin, a shan, so that you knew which one they were talking about. Anyway, so the shan means to project, stick your hand out, and the mam means to raise up. So if you do this and then do this, that's the concept, to project, to raise up. It means to draw attention to. That's the word for name. It's your to draw attention to. And in Hebrew, a name isn't something like Dick or Bob or Terry. It would be actually a descriptive words about what the person is like. And so that's how the language works in basics. There's a little more complexity to it than that, but it gives you a rough idea. 22 letters, or glyphs as we call them, one universal concept on each glyph, and then you mix them together, and when you do, a word isn't a word, it's a description. And because it's a description, no longer can you translate the word based on your bias or on doctrinal pressures, because the description is there. And as I was talking about the word sham, is to draw attention to, that word is translated a lot of ways that have nothing to do with the word name or draw attention to. And it's been changed to fit sentences. But now, we found that there's only one definition for each glyph set, not 84, not 5, 1. And that is where the change has come in, because when we applied this to the Old Testament, starting with Genesis, it rewrites a lot of stuff.
Can you give me kind of a concept of how you approached existing scriptural rendering? Let's just begin with Genesis. How did you begin to unfold the new translations that you found? And again, we want to correct this. You have stated on your website these are not translations, these are restorations.
Right. Right.
So you approach the book of Genesis looking at the present English translation or using the Hebrew text that we presently have. Is that correct?
Yeah. We used, actually, Kim found it off a website.
Okay.
Sorry, I don't know if I'm not speaking loud enough. Kim actually found original texts on the website. I forget which
site
she
went with. If anybody needs it, it's Macon Mamre, and they contain all of the texts that we're working with, so that it's open text. Anybody can go and use it.
Okay. And this is Hebrew, correct?
It is Hebrew.
Okay.
And this is the first time in history that the whole thing has been translated straight from the original Hebrew text, without doctrinal pressures and without input from the Vulgate or from, you know, any other source. This is straight from the Hebrew, and the most accurate that we know of. And a lot of people will say, no, come on, wait on a sec here. That's, you know, that text isn't that old, blah, blah, blah. That's not the point. The point is not how old the text is. The point is this system exists within the text, and there's no language on the earth that was known to be like this. You cannot have this language develop up from a bunch of people sitting around a fire picking, you know, stone, and everybody picks up that word. This is a language that took massive input, massive calculation, in order to be able to develop only 22 concepts that can form together to form thousands and thousands of words. There's no end to what you can do with this language. And it could not have evolved. If it couldn't have evolved, it means it was present at the beginning of wherever this started.
But it's wonderful in the fact that it is adaptable. As our society grows and changes, you can still incorporate new words.
Yeah, they can make words up to fit whatever they're doing.
And yet it doesn't depreciate the language.
Right. Now, I'd like to point out several things before we go any further. The language cannot incorporate words from outside sources.
That glass again.
Right, like the word glass, that cannot be incorporated into Hebrew. Modern Hebrew, yes. Ancient Hebrew, no. And here's why. When they heard a word, in this case, glass is what they would hear, glass.
Mm-hmm.
So they would then in their head hear the g sound, which means to fold, the L sound, to, and the S sound would be to enclose. So to fold, to enclose. So if I held this up and said, this is a to fold, to enclose, they'd be like,
no, it's not.
That's not. That's a to pour. And so you can't incorporate words from outside. So if Hebrew words exist in other languages, it's because they were exported. And because this can't import, the language can't be diluted. The second thing is, because it works on a description, each word is a description, you can't use the word. See, if I said, Randy, that's a really cool shirt you have on. In English, that could mean it's not keeping you warm or it's very stylish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay? You can't do that in Hebrew. And so because of that, the language can't be distorted either. The meanings maintain, the language cannot incorporate, so it maintains, and after 3,000 years, there wouldn't be any change in the language, which is brilliant.
We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to continue pursuing this a little bit more with the Chronicle Project here on the Threshing Floor. And we're back on the second segment of the Threshing Floor with my guests, Chris and Michelle from the Chronicle Project, and be a good time to give the website out as well. It is thechronicleproject.org, is that correct?
Yep.
Nice new fresh website design that was just put up by Utah.
And then switched one day later.
And that's the beautiful thing about web design.
I don't know if you've been to it or not. We put it up for, did it get 2 days? Maybe it got 2 days. It was really nice. It was all blacks and reds, and then everybody sent in, it looks satanic. It's like, okay. So we switched to blue.
It looks like somebody's concept of satanic, actually.
Okay, blue light is true light, red light is dead light. Okay, there's a little fantasy quote for you. So we switched it to blue, and now everybody's happy. So
there you go.
Everyone's calm. The material.
Yeah. So one more time, thechronicleproject.org, and you'll probably see that crawl along your screen on the video, and we'll put some links up on the website as well to get you over there to look at this material, because really, this is kind of eye material. You need to look at the materials themselves. Talking about it, and again, Michelle, you had something you were going to say right before we went to break. You want to go ahead and bring that back in for us?
Certainly. I was just going to comment that really the language is every teacher's dream. Their pupils can't take slang and incorporate it into the language to the point that it's now in the Oxford Dictionary.
You know, I'm thinking about the book of Zechariah, and I think in there, at least the way we have it translated, it says that God would restore pure language.
Mm.
And, the whole time that I've been, just for the listeners to know, we've kind of been in contact with each other for quite a while now. I don't remember how many months. Three, four, five, 6 months. We've kind of been talking back and forth with each other on this. And I've had this sense all along as I got comfortable with the material and we got to know each other that this was far larger than anything I imagined when I originally looked at it. That, in fact, without going into hyperbole, I think this is groundbreaking, and I think that what you've begun here is something that's going to have ripple effects going out, largely because of the Internet. So we're talking about a language here that's closed, that's sealed, that has concepts to it that are linked to actual human beings. The way we think as children, the way we move,
yes,
the natural things about us as creatures, this actually feels to me like a language that a sovereign God would design for his children.
Yeah.
Actually, on that note, fascinating enough, Chris was at work today.
Oh, yeah.
And
this is what we told you about. We promised Randy tonight that we were going to reveal something that we just
Threshing Floor exclusive.
Threshing Floor exclusive. This is the first. We're going to do this. And what dawned on me this afternoon, and I'd like to say that it was all mine, but Utah also has put something on the website, and it dawned on her. But the magnitude just caught me this afternoon as driving along. It was really interesting because I did not know what she put on the site because she'd rewritten some of the disclaimers on the front. And I had this epiphany as I was driving. And surely amazed when I got home and read what Utah had written on the site as the opener regarding, it says, if you know ancient Hebrew, please read this first. She describes the fact that it can be taught to children who are deaf because it's emotion, so it's like sign language.
Sign,
now, here's the kicker. when we first got the language, I thought this language is ingenious. It can't be changed. It holds its own. It's self-defining. There's nothing like this on the earth. And then this afternoon, it dawns on me that the language is designed so that every single person in a society speaking this can communicate with a deaf person. So nobody who's deaf would be marginalized, because every single Hebrew would be able to talk to them by simply doing the mannerisms that go with the words.
Or any speech impediment.
And anybody who had a speech impediment could do the same back.
Actually, fascinating, it just dawned on me right now as well, the concept that you're military. You didn't even have to create a new tactical language.
Yeah. The military wants to communicate to somebody. He looks at him and he goes,
now, that actually makes a lot of sense when you stop to consider the early days of the Hebrew people coming into the land and having to begin battling the people who were there that needed to be rooted out.
Right.
Something we can talk about a little bit later in terms of who those people were, by the way.
Yeah, I knew you were going to do that.
Well, we got to go into that because there's a prophetic side to all of this, and one of the great strengths of what you've done in the renderings of scripture on the website is that I think you've informed certain prophetic things going back in time and forward in time, because to me that's what's interesting about prophecy, is how it streams from end to beginning, and God has spoken the beginning from the end. So in a lot of ways for me that was real meaningful. I need to ask, how did we get to the place where Hebrew itself was, can I use the term, corrupted? How did we lose it? How did we lose the language?
How about simply lost? And I want to give you an idea from Scripture how quickly that can occur. When the Babylonian deportation took place, that was 80 years. After 80 years, when the people got back, they didn't even know there was law. Until a hole was banged in the wall that they were rebuilding, they found a hidden room, and they found all these scrolls in it. So within 80 years, they lost all of the knowledge that the law had even existed in 80 years. So you can imagine, with the fall of Rome in 70 AD, everybody in Jerusalem is deported. They're taught the Greek ways, and that's that. The teachers are lost. They're persecuted. You betcha. I can almost guarantee then, within a generation, all knowledge of the language and other items is lost. And so that's how this disappeared. Now, before we go any further, I'd like to do something, because you're going to have a lot of listeners out there, and I'd like to mention something. If you're out there listening right now and you're an atheist, or you're a churchgoer, or you're a Buddhist, or you're an evolutionist, the thing I want to tell you right now is don't hang up and think that this is a religious discussion, because what we want to point something out, and Randy will get into it later, is the fact that you have to ask yourself one question. The experts have had this for well on 100 years now, and no expert has ever even come close to finding what's really there, okay? So you have to ask yourself, if they went to this much trouble to malign and change it so that you would never read it the way that it was written, ask yourself this question: why? Why was this much trouble spent to make sure that you never get to read it? Okay? So what I'm asking anyone out there to do is go and read this, not with a religious context to it, but read it and ask yourself, is there something that is being hidden from me? Go and find that out. After that, I don't care what you do with it.
Well, I think for people who may come across this as well, certainly on the Internet, we've gone pretty deep over the years in bringing out things that are now staple of what's called alternative media. You know, the dark secrets about our nations, our rulers, our governments, our intelligence agencies, and the wars we've fought. But they've hidden something from us for a very long time at great expense.
Yes.
That has a value that goes back thousands and thousands of years. This is a part of history that has been submerged, lost, suppressed at the price of blood.
Yes.
And so the important question is, how accurate is your view of a history that you're judging? Our perspective of who we are in history is something we need to deal with. And that's really, you know, again, the heart of this thing, because some of the hardest people right now to deal with the subject we're talking about are Christians, fundamentalist Christians, and I believe as well many mainstream Jewish people are going to struggle with this because we're ingrained in it.
Sure we are. I struggle with this. If you want to really understand, I'm indoctrinated into it. I memorized it. And I'm, of all of us, I'm the person that has the hardest time with this, because we will not, we'll take a line and then we'll just run it through the self-defining Hebrew, and then we'll assemble a line, put it up, and I'm not even sure what it's supposed to say. I make sure on purpose
to not read it
and to try not to put in the words that I remember should be there, and then we assemble it, and it shocks me every time that that occurs, and it's painful. Michelle, tell them about your pain.
It is. I can't think of another description other than painful. It continually surprises us. And it's not that it's always a huge change, but that one little item can change the entire picture inside of your head.
Yeah.
It's the same as commas. In key sentences, that comma can change everything.
Yeah, and if it was as simple as a comma, it wouldn't be a bad thing.
No.
But what's happening in this case is it's literally rewriting everything we know about what happened back then. And a lot of people out there, and I'm going to put this to them right now, a lot of people out there think of the Bible as a fairy tale, and it's got, even between chapters 1 and 2, there's a lot of errors that clash at each other with the story. If you go and you read the SDH version, there's not one clash or error now. It all meshes. And that's a change to begin with. But what really changes is a completely different story about what happened. And there is no way in the world that shepherds sitting around a fire could come up with the knowledge of science that is now displayed within those texts. They are mind-numbing as to what is now there.
Maybe what we could do here at this point, in this segment, I'd like you to maybe, well, actually, we're not going to have time to do this. We're running on the clock again. You know what, let's take a break on this segment and come back. I want to talk a little bit about Book 1 in the Chronicle and what emerges out of what we've known as the Book of Genesis. We'll do that when we come back on the other side of the Threshing Floor. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Threshing Floor. We're here with the Chronicle Project. And in this segment, I want to kind of go through a little bit of practical exercise with Chris and Michelle from the Chronicle Project. That's thechronicleproject.org. And we're going to take a look at what you know in your Bible as the Book of Genesis. To the Chronicle Project, this is Book 1, 2 Chronicle. And what you're going to see as you look at the text and as Chris goes through this is how profoundly different it, the feeling of it is, the communication. And I want you to get a sense of what's being communicated here and why I believe that as you read this, you're going to get a sense for the heart of the Father and why He created us and why He created this world and the plan behind it. So this is Book 1, the Chronicle. I'll read the first verse, Chris, and maybe you can just kind of pick up the narrative.
Sure.
Verse 1 says, to chronicle, to begin, to produce, the supreme ones, with the celestials and with the planet Earth.
Right. I'd like to point out the most important word in that one is the word with. It's the word ath. And the reason that's the most important word, that word appears about 12,000 times in the Old Testament. If you look it up in the Strong's, they'll tell you that the word is unexpressed in English. That's, of course, until they need it to be expressed, and then they'll translate it however they want it to be translated, including the word with, when it suits their translation. The word actually is with. The SDH proved it's the word with. Now, why is that so important? Because the original one says, first off, in the beginning, and that word is not in the beginning. The word is to chronicle. And I think you to chronicle the beginning of the production with the celestials and with the earth. That's denoting not making them, but making with them. They already existed. And that's hyper important, because suddenly we're dealing not with a 6,000-year-old creation, but we're dealing with a much older creation. Now, science and Genesis match. That's important. Okay, move on to the next line here.
So
unless
you
have a question.
No, I don't. Verse 2 then goes on to say, basically a reiteration of what you just brought out. And the planet Earth had existed for a long time without attention and amid being to note. Now, the English here is a little difficult for us to bridge, so maybe you can inform that.
And that's why we put the paraphrased version at the end of this, so you have trouble with it. What it simply says is, the Earth had existed for a long time. Now, we're not the first to come up with the concept, actually. If you read Young's version, he actually put that in. That blows me away, because that guy knew something back then, and he was able to get that into his version. You have to understand, this is not our interpretation. This is what is there. Okay? So it literally says, had existed for a long time. Again, that matches up with science. And you'll note it says it was of note. Okay? The fact that it was of note is important, because that means that it was on a list where somebody had noted it, but they hadn't done anything with it. That's important to note. Okay?
So we're looking at a creation here that's actually, what, desolate at this point?
Yes.
And is it desolate because it hasn't been developed, or is it desolate because something has occurred?
Well, it's of note because it's a water planet.
Okay.
Okay, and that's hyper important. If you read, as you get further down in the verses, you're going to see that point. I believe it was of note because their lands had not been raised up at that point. And so what you're dealing with is, if you were approaching the Earth and you were seeing it from space, you would see a blue planet. Absolute, no landmass is showing. A complete blue planet. That's why the Earth was of note. Can you imagine that? A planet covered in water? And so it appears that that's why Earth was of note, simply because of that one distinct thing that most planets don't have.
Reading on in verse 2, it says, "And darkness upon to face the saltwater ocean, and to draw in, parenthetically from an outside source, the supreme ones, air upon the face of that water." Now, that again, here we're kind of faltering with the English on that.
Try to think of the way Yoda speaks, and that's the way, that's Eastern speak, that's the way the sentences are constructed. So if anyone has trouble with it, you have to think like Yoda is talking, and I think everyone's immersed enough in Star Wars for that. That line that you're looking at right there in Standard Bible is, "And the Spirit of the Lord fluttered upon the waters." Fluttered upon the waters. Okay, that's a little abstract. What it actually says is that the Earth didn't have an atmosphere. And so these supreme ones, which I should tell you who the supreme ones are. The supreme ones are, it's the heavenly council, it's the angels, it's the ones who have been directed by God to do all of this. And at chapter 2, you realize it's God who put all of this in progress. The angels are carrying out the work. And it's interesting because this isn't a snap your fingers and it occurs. This is literally manual labor that they're putting into this, obviously using some kind of technology along with it. But they somehow draw an atmosphere in over the whole planet Earth. That's absolutely amazing. No way would you be able to have some shepherds sitting around and say, "So when we write this down, what do you guys figure? There was no air? And the big guy brought some air in or something?" No, it's not going to happen. This shows that there was an event that occurred back then that is literally mind-numbing in its capacity, and that is putting a breathable atmosphere on a planet that is a water planet and then developing it. Okay, hit the next line for you.
Okay, this is verse 3. And so to declare the Supreme Ones, so to exist, to illuminate.
Yes. Now, a lot of that's been done over a long amount of time. They think that that means that God turned the light on, and then there was light, but there was no sun. If you check further on, it states that the sun already existed. So what is happening right now at this moment is that they're reigniting the sun. They're actually turning it back on, or they're replacing it. One of those two items is happening because that's where the illumination is coming from. And it's very simple to know illumination is coming because you'll notice when we get to it, at the end of the day, it says there was sunset.
Okay.
You can't have sunset if there wasn't a sun.
Right.
Okay, so at this point, the sun gets reignited. It gets turned back on. Something had happened. Now, whether they replaced a dead star or a dying star with a new star, I don't know. But that's what it says happened. Okay, next line.
And so to perceive the Supreme Ones with the, to illuminate, as so to satisfy.
Right. Now, notice it says to perceive the, to illuminate. The what? The sun. The thing which is illuminating. Okay? The
mm-hmm.
sun is there. So, this corrects one of the notions that people have that the sun was made on like the third day or something. I forget what it is. The sun was made or turned on, bang, right there at the start. This is one of the corrections that shows up so that there's no longer conflicts.
Okay, we continue here. And so to separate the Supreme Ones between the, to illuminate, and between the darkness.
Yes. By turning the sun on, a separation between the time of illumination and the time. So that's all it says. It's very simple. It's not like anything special.
And so to call by name the Supreme Ones, to illuminate, to arise, and you have in parenthesis day,
yes.
And to darkness, calls by name, to carry away. And so to exist sunset, and so to exist sunrise, day to unite.
Right. Now, it's interesting, the word is achad, which means to unite. And so what they're telling you there, you'll see as you go, if you're a person reading it, you can hear a clock chiming in the background, I'm
yes.
assuming. I'll wait till it's done. There we go. A very interesting notation is every single day that will be named day one, day two, day three. If you're in your Bible, it'll simply say day one, day two, day three, day four.
Mm-hmm.
In the Hebrew, it's completely different. Absolutely fascinating. So the first day is called the day of Achad, and it means to unite. To unite what? To unite the day and the time of night into one unit. That's why it's called the day of Achad. It's the day of unity. It's also the day when the Supreme Ones came to the earth. And, again, starting a relationship of unity there. This is why this day is called the Day of Unity. It's a play on words. It's also one.
We got a break coming up, so I think what we'll do is take it now, and we'll come back, and maybe we'll go through a few more verses of this just to give you a flavor of it. We'll return in a few minutes after this message. I'm Randy Moggins. This is The Threshing Floor with my guests, Chris and Michelle from The Chronicle Project. We'll be right back. Welcome back to another segment of The Threshing Floor here with The Chronicle Project in Saskatchewan, Canada. Did I mess that up sufficiently? Saskatchewan.
The first time we did that, I thought you locked John on us when you tried that.
Saskatchewan, Canada. That's where they be. And we're going through, I guess, kind of right now, a little bit of an analysis for those of you who are hearing audio. We're just reading through what you know to be the first chapter of Genesis, in what is basically called to chronicle in the translation, the rediscovery, the self-defining Hebrew that the Chronicle Project is putting together for the book of Genesis. So I want to read one more verse here, and we're going to go through this. This is verse 6, and it says, "And so to declare the supreme ones, so to exist a hollow expanse to cut inside thee that water, and so to exist that split across between that water to that water." Now again, I'm reading this as an English direct transliteration of the Griffith characters.
Yes.
In the text themselves that Chris and the group have put on the website, we do have paraphrase which amplify and give you a better grasp of what's being spoken here. So verse 6, Chris.
Very interesting. Okay. They, using some technology of some kind, I have no idea how, they're able to divide planet-wide the water, and not necessarily a thick layer, it could be like 10 feet, for example. And what they did is they split this off of the surface of the whole planet, and then they literally raised it into orbit around the planet. Now, the person out there sitting there, he was like, what would be the purpose of that?
So this would be the firmament?
No, actually. This is a fascinating concept. They split this water, they crack it up into orbit around the atmosphere, and this has a significant effect. They've done computer models on this, because this is not unknown that this has occurred, according to this writing. But what effect this has is that the sunlight coming in towards this, first off, harmful radiation gets screened out. Second, instead of the sun hitting all of its light straight onto the equator, it bends it like it would occur if it was going through a contact lens. And so it disperses light in a more even manner. Because of that, you're not going to end up with desert areas around the equator. Anyone who knows how it works, the sun hits the equator, the heat swirls off, disperses on both sides, and because of that, it drives areas of the water back, and you get bands of desert around the equator area. Using this system, you completely stop that from occurring, and the planet will be much warmer, and the heat will be more evenly distributed, the light will be more evenly distributed. You create a paradise. On top of that, by screening out the radiation,
people live longer.
A lot longer. You're looking at a lifespan of 800 years, and people don't believe that, but if you read through the Bible, right after the flood, you'll notice that the age of man starts dropping off within generations significantly. This is what was stopping the aging of man. And what we're dealing with here is a huge section of technology that could not be explained by a bunch of guys sitting around a campfire making these stories up. Okay, onward.
So I guess in going through this, we see a very different picture of Genesis, of the creation. We get a sense as well of these beings you call the Council, the Supreme Ones, that there's actually, God has what, subcontracted creation on one level?
You want to say something about that? Because it's something that always amazes me when, if you're a Christian and you hear this, you get all in angst.
Some people get very upset.
Sure. That God didn't snap his fingers and have it happen.
For some reason, I think it makes him less God.
Yeah.
And yet someone fully capable of doing this, hiring someone, having people under him to do all this work, how does that make him any less God?
I mean, they don't have any problem with the fact that God tells a prophet to go tell whoever. Well, why doesn't God do the job himself? Answer. Because we become mature by going through the process of what we're doing. And even the angels, by doing the work that they did to seed the earth, to put everything together on the earth, the knowledge that they would gain from that, the maturity that goes onward with that, the only way that you gain maturity is by doing. And so God, in his wisdom, he has those beneath him do this stuff so that they can understand, so that they can obtain what they need to become a more mature being. That's why. So you shouldn't be freaked out by the fact that the angels did the work.
No, and considering our own need to create, we as beings have this need to create, to have a very interactive with our environment and everything around us, and form it to us, to our insides. We decorate our home based on personal tastes. I mean, the thought that God would have people working for him that had any less need.
Yeah. That the angels had any less need.
That they had any less need than us. This is very much what has occurred to the Bible, has created a very large distance between us and our Bible.
Yes.
That is actually what I came away with as well, both here and in the rendering of what we've known as the commandments of the law, which I think, again, reading that brought God closer to me and understanding these laws were not things that were given to stop us from doing things. They were given to us as a way for us to not only survive, but to prosper.
Yes. Yeah, and that has so changed how we viewed everything. Go ahead.
I was going to say, actually, it helped us to avoid the pitfalls. All of those are there literally as stepping stones to make us better human beings along the path of where he intends us to go. Not as something to cage us in, but as literally something we would instruct our own children with.
Sure. I think it's very interesting the way the Bible is done right now. God is the bad guy.
Oh, he very much
He's
is.
He's the bad guy all the way through.
Yes.
And what has shocked us as we have retranslated, I shouldn't say that, as we've restored what was originally there, is that every single time God is supposed to be the bad guy, or one of the well-known guys is the bad guy, it turns out they weren't. And the mistranslation just conveniently made God the bad guy. Just conveniently, and I'm thinking in this case, made Noah the bad guy. And the funny part is, when we restored it, it was the opposite. Mm-hmm. And I'll skip forward to chapter 2 of Genesis, where the Nakash, it reads in the Bible, and the serpent was the most cunning of all. Mm-hmm. The Nakash, when he did what he did, he got Adam and Eve to put themselves under his authority. And when God came back, in your Bible, it says, and God cursed the earth and all which lived within it.
Yeah.
In the restoration, God looks at the Nakash and he says, you have cursed the earth and everything that's in it. Why? Because he got Adam and Eve to put them under him, then God no longer had the legal right to interfere. And to show forward, when Jesus is ends up meeting the Nakash, called the adversary, the adversary says, he shows him all of the kingdoms and says, if you will worship me, I will give them to you. Why? Because it was his right. He was still the owner, the legal, rightful owner of the earth, which is why bad things happen to good people. So the next time you ask the question, why didn't God do something about that? The answer is because he's not legally allowed to, and God is bound by his own law. If he won't follow his law, why should anyone else? He maintains a following of his own law. There's a long story to go with that. You don't have time on these segments to go into it, but it's stuff we found which is amazing. Now, a little segment, if people have a chance, go forward and read the book of Nakah, which is the book of Noah. It's
yes.
Nakah. Okay, his name means to proceed. His grandfather's name, Methuselah, means when he dies, it will come. So each of the names is actually, I believe when we string them all together, they're actually going to be sentences telling us all about the history through the names of the people. But that, again, is another story. When Noah, there's the story when Noah gets drunk. And he goes into his tent and he rips the flap and he takes his clothes out, doesn't realize the flap is open. He's laying naked and Ham comes and sees. He goes and tells his brothers. Noah wakes up, curses his grandson, and makes all of them to serve the brother. Okay? What a horrible man. If you read the restored version, what happens is this. Noah gets drunk, rips the tent. His son Ham sees it, goes to his brothers, and tries to use this event as proof that it's time to supplant Daddy because he's not a fit leader anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So they call him Ham, the father of, and they have a name there. The word is actually insurrection. It doesn't mean he had a kid named that, which is how they have it in the Bible. It means he developed this plan where he and his people, because this happened way after the flood, he and his people were going to dump Daddy. He was going to put himself in power. And the brothers, instead of going with him, went to Father They were honorable. They covered their father. They repaired the thing on the tent. When Daddy woke up, he was informed of what Ham attempted to do. And then Noah called on God, and he said, I need you to help me put this down. God sent supreme ones. The supreme ones went, and they took all of the people who were part of this insurrection, and they then put them as servants into the house of Yafatha, and then the supreme ones stayed in his brother's house while they maintained this new order. Completely different story. And this we have found over and over and over and over. This translation we have strangely always makes the good guys the bad guys. I don't think that's an accident.
No. And we're going to come back for one final segment, and we'll touch on a little bit more of the impact of the restoration of what I see to be the true Hebrew word of God. We'll do that when we come back on the other side of the threshing floor. I'm Randy Morgan. Welcome back. Final segment of the Threshing Floor. We're talking with the Chronicle Project. We have Chris and Michelle with us for this program. There's actually a team of eight people working on this project in different capacities. Eight people? Is that correct?
I guess I never counted.
I counted eight.
You discovered something.
There's eight people.
Let me quickly, before you go through, I'd like to add a couple of people in
that have been very helpful,
and you probably don't even know about it. We wanted to mention George Ure over at www.urbansurvival.com,
yes.
because George really mentored us at the beginning of all of this, because I sent him a letter. I never expected him to even rant, but I sent him a letter saying, do you see what we've got? And he just about came unglued. And his is a financial website, and everything financial, but I mean from one end of the spectrum to UFOs kind of thing. But he actually did stories on us and interviews and really started to put us out there. And so we just wanted to thank him for that and just mention how much work he's put in. And we'd also like to thank whoever put us on CNN. Thank you very much. 42,000 people saw that story. And man, the website's just been going crazy since then.
Utah,
we're going to get to Utah. Yes. You wanted to mention.
Yeah, maybe at this point, let's just give us a quick roll call on the people that comprise the team and a little bit about what you all do. Michelle.
Well, I'm Michelle, and I know we covered this last time. I swear I have the ideas from left field. We'll sit around and talk about everything, and when they're absolutely stumped, yeah, half the time the problem is I jump three steps ahead.
Oh.
I jump so far in advance because I don't know if it's my tendency to not only want to hear what you're saying, but I want to interpret it and then go to the next step of what we should be doing. And that's what I do in my life, and that's how I view the Hebrew a lot of times. So when everyone else is stumped, let's throw it to Michelle and see what she can work up.
We don't do it normally because this is how I develop this face.
He gets a headache otherwise.
Okay, that's my Michelle face.
He'll usually tell me that's three steps ahead. You're on the right track. You get the concept, now you're three words ahead of yourself.
So Michelle Bell here is the lady who figured out that every glyph was a word/concept because...
Yeah,
I never would have gone there.
It was interesting. I've been thinking about it for a few days, And it just kept coming back to me. And the funny thing is, we'd already just hit the point where we finished all the two-word glyph sets. Mm-hmm. Chris had just sat down, and we were going through and, you know, eradicating any imperfections. We were going through and working down to the best possible term. And Chris said his famous words, "I'm almost comfortable, I think we're done." And it came to me that we have all these directionals. I'm like, what about the fact that if that one word tacked onto two words creates a direction, why couldn't two words together each be their own direction? Because one word can be a prefix. Why can't it be its own word? And if one word is a prefix or can be its own word, why can't you put two of these of their own words together? How about the entire language being a single word, single glyph? And as to my previous description of the fact that my ideas are always left field,
I poo-pooed it.
It was poo-pooed
for all of 4 hours until I completed it, and I apologize a lot.
The next morning was quite fascinating.
I've learned not to say the "I'm comfortable with this" anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm not comfortable with this. That means that it's accurate now.
So that.
Okay, who else? Who else is in there?
We have Jen. Dave. Danielle. Of course, Christopher, Kimberly. And as we were saying before, we have Utah and
Dale,
all the wonderful people out there.
They're working on the computer programs that you can see the computer. No, you hear about the computer program at the website.
Yes.
10 words or less. Utah created a computer program. This is more than 10 words. Utah created a computer program whereby we can enter a word into, once we translated it, put it where it appears in that, and then it will put that word every single time it appears. Everywhere in the Old Testament, and I'd like to point out that has been invaluable because Strong's has this nasty tendency. You get a six-letter word and a six-letter word, and they'll say, those aren't six-letter words. It's another three-letter word, this one over here, that has nothing to do with these, but this is what it is here. I should send you that graphic so you can pop it up on the screen for people so they can see two of the same words, and they'll tell you it's a completely different word. Now, the problem with that is then if I want to research where the six-letter word is somewhere else in the Bible, not going to happen because it'll only tell me where the three-letter words are. I'll never be able to find it. But with Utah's program, when I plop that in, it says it exists three more times. Here's where it is. I went, I looked at the context, I was able to translate the word. Thank you for the endless amount of hours that you have put in on this. Oh, can't even mention it. Have we got everybody?
Yes, we do. I was just going to also mention, it's been fascinating because they have very much filled in something that is not our expertise, and we all seem to match together to form a team that balances each other off. Where one of us has a strength, they supply that strength. Where another has a weakness, someone else supplies in that area as well, and it's been wonderful. I mean, to a large degree, just to give you an overview of us, we'd sit around the table, all of us together, and we'd literally hash out this information together. We'd all have our books out researching. So I can't even give you an overview.
I just like to show you my research look.
Yeah.
There we go.
I can't even say this person was doing this job, that another, because we all really sat around sharing the books around the table and ideas, and it was very much a back and forth, and what are you hearing on this subject?
And the inspiration was amazing, because I remember one day where I couldn't get the N sound, and it was driving me crazy, and I couldn't get it. Dave walks in downstairs, and no joke, I hear, ask Dave. And I say, Dave, come up. Now, Dave's a mechanic. He operates heavy machinery, okay? He's not super Hebrew dude. And I said, Dave, come on up. And I said, look, this is what we've got. I said, the concept's just not right. I don't know what it is. What do you think? He said, try the word to follow. And I was like, of course. And I typed it in. Bingo! That's the one that worked. He says, that all? I said, yeah. And then he goes, that's the kind of stuff. Weird.
He's very strong, silent type.
You all kind of formed this project out of a community, not a cult, not a commune, but a community of faith.
We see each other other than study time, we see each other on Friday nights, we have Sabbath together. I wish it was a cult, then I'd have money.
We literally all came together in the need to find truth. I mean, yes, there's the backdrop of such and such was a friend. Jen worked actually for Danielle. That's how they met each other.
Yes.
You know, and
Danielle used to own some companies in Saskatoon, and Jen was hired to work one of the companies. That's how we met her. Sorry.
And for myself personally, I have family in this area for well past 100 years, 150 years. So this is my home area. So someone moved in. I had to...
Yeah, we bumped into her through the people down the street. And one night when I was working, doing carpentry work in their house, she came over to visit, and I got talking with her, and I said, "Hey, how'd you like to spend 4 years of your life making your eyeballs bleed?" No, I'm kidding. That's not what happened.
I guess to wrap all this up, I want to ask Michelle, on a personal level, what impact has this all had on you?
You know, that's a tough question. I would say it's had a lot of impact, but through my entire life, there's always been a searching and a feeling that things weren't quite right. Even from a very young age, 12, 13, I'd go to church and I'd talk to the pastors, and I was told that my ideas were wrong, that what I read was, no, that's not correct. And I was given familiar dogma, whereas I give them the verses, but that wasn't good enough because that's not what their church believed, and they had some quick report as to why a little 12-year-old girl couldn't possibly be right. So there was always a sense that it was wrong, and I think there was always an anger in that direction that, yes, I love my God, and my God is not everyone else's viewpoint of him. So in a lot of ways, this has been enlightening.
Yeah.
Because
your God was the God that was there.
Turns out my God was always there. In a sense, he has never changed to me. If anything, what we've continued to find has only proved that what I knew all along was very much true.
Isn't that the truth?
And to me, that's been absolutely wonderful. The pain has come in on the stuff that I allowed myself to believe that over the years, after a while, you buy into some things. You know, you buy into some of that, okay, that must be true. The pain is when what I did end up accepting, some of it that I accepted as truth, realizing it was wrong all the time, and the anger at yourself for not hearing, and then having to strip that away again.
Yeah.
And that seems to be a common thread among the people that I encounter as well. There's a pain in all of this, there's a joy in it, because I think all of us are on a discovery path. I think that's what ties us together across continents, across nations, across differences in faith. Jews, Gentiles, people have come through all different streams of faith, but the thread that I find with most people that I'm connected with now is they want the truth, they want the lies to stop, because we're running out of time and we need to learn this.
We get a lot of letters like that in the last week. Masses of letters, some really nasty ones, and yet some that are just fantastic. The bulk of what comes through are people saying, "Thank you, finally." Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you right now, thank you guys for the letters. That's what keeps us going. If it wasn't for the letters, some days we sit there and go, "Why are we doing this?"
Yeah.
Because it is so frustrating. It is so angering. To see how badly it's been distorted, and I can't even tell you the emotion we feel. It really...
You don't have to, because I experience it also, and I know what it feels like.
What we've talked about.
Where people reach out and go to the trouble to tell you thanks for the work, because it's discouraging, it's difficult, it's heartbreaking, and at the same time, there's joy in it, and I sense that coming from you and from the people that we've all connected with over the last few months. I think we're in an interesting journey right now.
We are, and I've often found, and this is my personal, that we are more connected, I think, than we'd ever realize, and our spirits hear more than our brains allow them to. We shut down something that is inside of us telling us the truth constantly.
And we should be listening to that. Before we go, because I know it's drawing to a close, because we have got letters like this, I want everybody to know, we are Jewish people, okay? Because we've got letters where people go, "You're just Christians pretending to be Jewish people." So,
I want everybody to know. People do that all the time.
It's crazy. Because we mentioned Jesus, for example, or the word church, everybody, there's no synagogue here, okay? There's no other place to ask. We want everybody to know. We do Sabbath and everything like that, but we also have incorporated the teachings of Jesus because they basically, Jesus' teachings run along the teachings of Khalil. And so it's not unusual for us to read them. I wanted everybody to know that. So please stop sending letters saying you guys really aren't. Okay, they're wine blessing, so you know. Okay.
Hey, thank you guys for coming on. Thank you to all the team out there. Thanks to you, the listener, who can listen to this and go to the website, thechronicleproject.org. Look at this information and, you know, take it to God. Take it into your spirit and understand that God's trying to open up new understanding. Time's short. You need this information. We're trying to get it out.
I was slipping in real quick. If you don't believe in God, I don't care. Write us a letter. Ask us questions. We will answer every letter you send us. Guaranteed, promise you, okay?
Cool. That's going to wrap it up this time. I'm Randy Moggins. This is The Threshing Floor. And this has been The Chronicle Project. We'll be back again with another show soon. The truth is out there. It's in you.